This is the MagicWordPodcast.com.
Well, good morning, revelers. We are now we're not wide-eyed and bushy-tailed, but we are awake having the first cup of coffee over here this morning. And it is July the 5th, and I say revelers because I'm sure that we Americans have been celebrating the Independence Day, as well as the people from UK celebrating their independence from us, I'm sure, as well. Nevertheless, so we are getting ready to go to the Big Three event, but when I came down just to get my morning cup of joe, that ran into Lance Burton's assistant, Gwen. Gwen, what's your last name, sorry?
Gwen Auger.
Auger.
Mm-hmm.
Auger. How do you spell that? That's a beautiful name.
A-U-G-E-R.
A-U-G-E-R. Are you French?
Kind
of a, okay. Were you born in France?
Or? No. I'm Canadian.
Canadian, okay.
Yeah.
So you just celebrated your 150th celebration of Canada Day last week, was it?
We did. We did. It was great.
And?
That was actually last year, so this one was 151.
Oh, it was? Okay, because I saw several people had posted on that, and I thought they were...
Oh, yeah. Canada 150 was a big thing.
Okay.
So that's just going to keep going, but it was 151.
They're still celebrating.
Yeah.
Okay. So you've been an assistant then, and not just on stage, I guess, handing him things, but also a box jumper?
Also a box jumper.
How long have you been doing that?
About 9 years.
Were you doing that at the Monte Carlo? Also, you at the end of that run or not?
No.
Because he retired in 08?
He retired before I got into being an assistant.
Okay. So where do you travel with him to assist?
Conventions, so I'm here with him.
Okay. Now, I know that he's been involved, of course, with the Lance Burton Teen Seminar. And
yeah.
So were you involved in talking with some of the young people also and saying, here's another career path?
No, I was a little bit late in coming to this convention. I had to work on the 2nd, so I couldn't get out here until late on the 3rd. So mm-hmm. by then, most of the teen seminar had ended.
Right.
But that was okay.
Mm-hmm. Now, are you a dancer? I mean, from your background?
I'm not a dancer, no.
Really? So you're just, I guess, flexible.
I guess so.
So how did he come across meeting you? Was he? Go ahead.
So Lance and I met because I had asked him to interview one of his assistants. Well, we'd actually met in a convention called IMX.
Sure. Oh, gosh, I remember that.
Yeah.
That was a one and only, I think.
It
was a great convention.
It was great. Yeah. It was so fun.
Yeah. Remember Copperfield interviewing David Berglas on Skype, and that was
fun. Oh, it was such a fun convention. Yeah, so we met there, and then I reached out to him on Twitter and said, hey, can I interview one of your assistants? Because I was doing interviews on Magician's Assistants for Vanish Magazine.
Okay. And you're working with Paul Romani.
Yeah. Okay. And so he said, sure, do you want to talk to me about it? I said, no, I want one of the girls. And he said, okay. So he put me in touch with Joelle. We did a great interview. She's fantastic. And then I was at Magic Live, and mm-hmm. he and the girls were doing a presentation.
Okay.
So I knew he was there. And some of the other guys knew that I knew he was there. So they said, well, do you want to come over here? And I was like, I can't go over there. And so they brought me over to where the backstage area was. So I knocked. And Lance came out, and he said, oh, hey, Gwen. He said, do you want to meet Joelle? And I said, yeah. So he let me meet her.
Because you'd only done the conversation over the phone, I guess, or
Skype?
Yeah,
we'd just done it over the phone and email.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
So it was great. So I got to meet her, and, I mean, ever since, Lance is such a great guy. It's so easy to be his friend. So
yeah.
Then,
yeah, it is.
I joke with him all the time, and I say, so do I get to be your assistant? Do I get to be your assistant?
You kind of bugged him, I
said,
guess.
You're
like a little sister
kind
of.
Are you going to come out of retirement yet?
Yeah. So when you are assisting, since he's not doing the big show or anything, does he travel much with any illusions or just like one illusion at a time?
You know, I haven't gone on the road with him to the shows yet, mm-hmm. but I might try to do some of them this year.
Okay.
And I don't know if he's going to bring any illusions, but I'm going to try.
Because I know that he and Keith West and Fielding West have been on the show.
And Kitty,
right. She's a great assistant. Love
her.
Yeah.
I'm going to always push for the assistants to get their names out there, too, Scott.
Yes, you should. You should.
I should.
Who are some of your heroines? Who are the people that you look up to, I guess, as being other assistants?
Oh, Pam, obviously.
Okay, yep.
Obviously, Pam. Yeah. Joelle's great. I mean, mm-hmm. it was great to meet her. Kitty.
How long had Joelle been working with Lance? You know? I mean, you talk with her.
I did talk with her. I don't remember. But,
spot.
I mean, I think they still kind of work together every now and then. Like,
but she was
Billy
the one.
Toppet.
Yeah, okay,
yeah.
Yes. But she was the one also that she did work with him at the Monte Carlo.
Yes.
Yeah, way
oh,
back
yes.
when, yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
How many assistants did he have? Do you remember then the show?
At least six.
Okay.
There has to have been more.
Hmm. I'll have to run into him. We'll ask him.
Yeah. Well, he'll be here soon. I've got his coffee.
Yeah, he's got to come and get it. Yeah, he said he's kind of a slow riser, and we were up early this morning, you know, with I thought I heard him.
Oh, no, he's not a slow riser. He beat me yesterday.
Did he? Okay. Yeah,
but I beat him today.
Up at the Eugene Berger Eulogy lecture last night, Legacy Lecture. That was a great lecture.
It was beautiful.
Sometimes in late lectures you see people kind of falling asleep, but last night everybody was wide awake till 1 o'clock, you know, easily.
Mm-hmm. It was great.
Yeah. Last evening's show was great seeing Luna Shimada also.
It was so fun. I'd never seen Luna perform.
Perform her whole show.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it was great. I was so excited. I was just cheering in the back. You can always hear me. I'll be the loud one going, woo!
Now, did you ever know Carol Roy, Marvin's wife and assistant? I didn't know how long you've been in magic or no. Yeah, she had died some years ago. Yeah.
No. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I never got to meet Carol.
Okay.
I did get to know Joni.
Mm-hmm.
Lovely
lady.
I just adored her.
Yeah.
Yeah. She met me at IMS.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
And then she was at a couple of Magic Lives.
She was at a couple of Magic Lives. Mm-hmm. And she always remembered me, always gave me big hugs.
Yep. Now, you know Carissa Hendricks?
She lives in Calgary with me.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, so the two of us live in Calgary together.
I had done an entire podcast with her a while back, and I love her. She's just
she's
the most effervescent, charismatic lady and got a great stage act, and I think she's great.
Yeah. So, she's wonderful. We work on some stuff in Calgary together.
So is this your first?
We're working on Make Magic, a weekly magic at restaurants in Calgary.
Mm-hmm.
So we have one restaurant venue, which is beautiful. They gave us a room. Called Escoba, and they've given us a room that we get to use every week, and we get to bring a different magician in, and guests can come in, and they can eat dinner, and they can watch magic, and it's...
That's nice. Sounds like a nice venue. Yeah. About how many people is it seat?
About 40.
Okay.
Yeah.
Nice. Now, I was going to ask if this is your first convention, actually.
No.
I'll say convention. I know you were talking about the IMX and the others over there, but I meant to say, is this your first IBM convention?
Oh, yes. This is my first IBM convention ever.
Because I was going to ask about how your experience was, you know, being a kind of a newbie to this, because we've had, I don't know how many, 80-plus years, you know.
I find it very welcoming, mm-hmm. Which is great.
People-friendly.
People are friendly.
Mm-hmm.
Probably helps that I'm hanging around with Lance, but people are really friendly here.
Yeah, I'm sure.
Yeah, but there was no fireworks last night.
You know, I was...
And it was my first 4th of July...
In the U.S.
In the U.S. And there were no fireworks.
I am surprised as well. I thought that out my window I'd be hearing that go out, particularly downtown. And there was a big celebration in the park across the street.
Mm-hmm.
Had the bands and everything yesterday afternoon. I thought, well, surely they're going to have fireworks last night, but nothing.
So they've said that they've postponed them
until
Saturday.
It's because it's week night. That was Wednesday night. That makes sense. Okay, well, we might still hear something
but
before
I thought,
the weekend's up.
Who postpones a holiday?
We're going to put off Christmas until Saturday because it's not convenient on a Wednesday, you know. Yeah, that's funny. So you're liking the convention, kind of getting around to things, and have you, aside from the Legacy lecture last night, did you hear Pop Hayden's lecture also?
I did not hear Pop's.
Very good lecture
yesterday. Pop was the first lecture that I ever saw, ever, and that was several years ago. He was in Calgary for a Mega Magic Saturday.
Yeah. So, hey, Lance.
Hey.
We're over here.
Scotty.
And Gwen, too. So, I was just interviewing an assistant over here. she talks about how many assistants did you have, by the way?
Not sure. Okay. Over the years.
Oh, she's at when
at
was
the
it?
End of your show.
At the end of the show, there.
There's like six.
I said there was at least six.
There's at least six. It's probably seven girls and two guys, two or three guys.
Yeah. All right. That's what you were saying. You thought about that many. All right. Well, thank you, Gwen, very much.
You're welcome.
Very, very pleasure talking with you. I hope you enjoyed the rest of the convention.
I will.
So the Magic Word Podcast. That was Gwen Forget.
Ogier.
Scotty out. Well, we just finished one of the big three events, and Chris and Neil were talking about birthday parties, but also what I thought was really important was the information about marketing and strategy for when you talk with clients over the phone and working with Google and everything else was pretty cool. But I wanted to, as we were leaving, just happened to run into a good friend, and I do mean not just a friend because he is a friend, but also a friend of the Magic Word. He's been enjoying the podcast for a while. Please welcome Michael Trix. Hey, Michael.
Thanks, Scott. How are you? I love the Magic Word. And speaking of Chris and Neil, they're great at marketing stuff. I've been, for the past 6 months or so, I've been part of a mastermind group with them and David Da Vinci and a couple of other guys. We get together on Google Hangouts, and every month we tell each other what, you know, what we've been up to, what our biggest success was, what our biggest challenge was over the last month, and we set goals for each other to
That's a good idea.
And it just, I'm down in the keys by myself all the time, and I don't, and having this people to bounce ideas off and work stuff, I've made an extra $800 a month just from talking to these guys,
get little
tips they've given me, and it's great to just get together once a month, and you hold each other accountable for that, accountability partners. You know, you set goals, and you don't want to show up next month and be like, oh, I didn't do anything about that. So now I'm on a couple fair markets that I'm doing. I want to step up to bigger gigs and stuff, and they've really helped push me. So Chris and Neil are great with marketing stuff, and they just had a great talk on it to share with people here.
How do you find people then to surround you with these brain trusts and kind of get to be a part of a group?
After I did... David Da Vinci's Mastermind Magic Master Summit thing. Yeah. He did a big thing on that, and just a couple of us kept in touch, and David was like, what do you guys think about getting this together? And he did a whole big thing where he charged people at first to be part of this thing.
Right.
And then afterwards, a few of us just kind of kept it going because we're making so much success of helping each other do
it.
We just... You know, no more charge or anything. We're all doing it for free because we're all equally helping each other with ideas of different stuff.
Everybody's getting something out of
it. It's just been a great teamwork thing, and I think anybody should get to that. You know, obviously we have our IBM rings. We go and we bounce ideas off each other, but this makes it a wider, you know, we're all in different parts of the country.
Right.
And just, you know, different venues and different ideas to share with each other. And it's been helpful for all of us, so we've kept it going.
You know, that reminds me of how that when you go and work out, it's nice to have a workout partner that kind of, when I used to be in the business world and there was a guy, you know, at lunch, he said, hey, we're going to go down and work out today. It's like, I didn't feel like it. Or I would tell him, if you got somebody kind of pushing
you. If you got an accountability partner, we call it.
Exactly.
There's a book called The Miracle Morning that me and David Da Vinci read together. And became accountability partners where you wake up early in the morning and you can get most stuff done by 8 o'clock in the morning instead of sleeping until 9 and starting your day rushing. You get up before anyone else does and you can sit for a minute and quiet.
Before the phone rings.
Yeah, before anything. You can get so much more done just that quiet time to yourself and start your day with a little, you know, it doesn't have to be meditation. Just sit for 5-10 minutes quiet. And, and it's amazing how focused you become and just guides you through your day. And we get up, you know, we'll walk or run, you know, 3 or 5 miles and... Days where I go, oh, I didn't feel like it today. Dave would text me back and go, that's fine, I'll do it 3 miles for you. And then you feel like crap. I get up and out the door I go.
Yeah.
You suck it up because you have that accountability person that makes you want to do it. It's really helpful. The weight loss, everything in my life's been better. Bouncing ideas and everything off these guys. It's a great thing. So get some people to talk with just about stuff, you know, your business, your like this marketing tools. One little idea that somebody could say to you could change your income immediately, you know.
Well, you know, one of the tips I got out of there was the 1-800 number. I hadn't thought about that before, you know, because people might think, well, he's local in this area because of the area code that you have.
Oh, right. They're in a different area code. They're going to charge extra to travel over here, but with an 800 number.
They don't know where you're
at. I've had 800 number on my business card for, God, I don't even know how long now, 15 years, and it's $2 a month. And it just rings to my same cell phone. It's not a different landline or anything.
Because they were talking about how whenever they changed that, I mean, literally the next day they started.
It's five or six contacts the very next day without, in Raleigh, it's a 2-hour ride for them. But so people would think that, oh, that's 2 hours away. If they know where their area code is, they're not going to charge
money, they'll do it.
Let's get the local guy here that charges cheaper and whatever. But if they don't know where it's coming from, that phone number, it's a big tip right there, for sure.
That's a good point. Well, now you're working here also for the IBM convention. And so you've been attending conventions for a long time.
I have been, and I did a lot of the competitions and stuff.
Yes.
And I'm excited to be here. It's my first big, doing the gala show Saturday night, opening the big show, and I'm very excited to be here.
Over at the auditorium.
At the Grand Rapids Civic Center. Mm-hmm. Jeff McBride's on the bill, Kyle and Misty Knight, Nick DeFat, Niels Dunker, the juggler, I'm looking forward to see. I've never seen him.
He is good.
Yeah,
he's very good.
I can't wait to see it. I've seen some of his Facebook stuff, but, you know, being there live is different. So I'm excited. Michael Finney really, you know, helped me out a lot, getting me to be part of this, and I appreciate that from him.
That's great. That's great. And do you do very much close-up or mainly just stage and things? Because I always think of you as a stage
rock guy. That's what people see. I love close-up. I always have my little pouch here with cards. And I started my career doing that. I was a bartender and started learning tricks behind the bar and then outside the bar, table hopping.
So lost up in the Keys, I guess. You're down in Florida Keys.
Yeah, I'm in the Keys. And, you know, if I'm hanging out after the show or whatever, people are hanging out. I love close-up.
Mm-hmm.
I still practice it every day. You know, yeah. I wake up in the morning, it's part of my routine to run through whatever I'm working on. Lately, it's been Doc Easton's Card Under Glass routine I've been working out. Not
great
exactly
routine.
His thing, but it's very cool stuff, and I'm digging that. And the past couple of years, it's been an ongoing thing, learning mnemonica, some
Memdeck
stuff. It's awesome, and that's just fun, man. It's very powerful. I know you do a lot of mentalism, and I've heard you say time and time again that you don't do a Memdeck thing yet.
Not yet.
Get on it, Scotty.
Well, you're the third person to say that.
There's a great app on the phone that helps you learn it, and that made it easy for me. I'm not, I've had a lot of years of partying, and I don't exactly have the memory that I should have either. But the app really helped me get it down, and I got it now.
Huh?
Yeah.
Awesome. Good to know. What have you thought of the convention so far? I mean, we're only just had a day and a half so far, but I've seen you at most of the activities and lectures.
I got here a day early. I was supposed to not come in until Wednesday. It's only Thursday now, but I came in Tuesday night, and I got to see Rick Merrill's lecture, who I love. He's hilarious.
Isn't that funny?
Man, he's awesome. And just his sense of humor, the dryness. I love it, and it's amazing stuff. And, for him to say, I won FISM with starting my act with a French drop. It's just it's true, and it's hilarious.
That's right.
And it's an amazing routine.
Yeah.
So that's great. And
did you hear the Eugene Berger Legacy Lecture last night?
I did. Of course, I'm a McBride student for years and studied under Eugene, so I had to be there for that. And it was wonderful. A couple, sad but happy too. Just all the good times. He helped a lot of people, and his magic will live on for sure.
Yeah.
It's amazing.
Yeah.
So I'm looking forward to the Legends of Comedy show tonight.
Yes.
That's going to be awesome. So I'm looking forward to that. And then, of course, for me to take the stage Saturday night, I can't wait.
Well, good luck with that. Break a thread.
I know
you're going to do great. Amazing as well. So
I'm excited.
And you're going to be doing some dubs.
I am. I'm doing, there'll be 10 dubs in my little 15-minute act. So, it's pretty fast-paced stuff. It'll be a great opening of the show. And
High rockin' music. Set
the energy level for the crowd and for the rest of the guys. I can't wait.
Awesome. You're going to do wonderful. Awesome. Thanks, Michael.
Thanks for having me, Scott. I appreciate it.
Thanks for being
a
friend.
All right. I love the magic word, man. I always will. Thanks, man.
So the Magic Word Podcast. That was Michael Trix. This is Scotty out. Well, we're in the dealer's room, and one of the things that the dealer's room always offers is a lecture table for the lecturers. Well, today and over the next couple of days, we're having a lecture then by Steve Valentine. Actually, yesterday was when you had
it. Yes, we did last night.
That's right. So we're here with Steve Valentine. How you see you?
Hello. How's everybody in Magic World?
We're fine. So
you do the voices for everyone. That's amazing.
So the question is that this is your first IBM convention?
It is.
Actually, I know you've been attending them perhaps in the past kind of before.
Only a few. I've never been a bigger convention attender because I've never had the. It always falls on a week where I'm working or something like that. That's always been a problem. But this has been so much fun so far. We're only 2 days into it.
Right. Yeah, and there are a lot of friends here, too. I know that you have
it's
well.
Great.
It's nice to work with friends as
it
well.
It is, but, a lot of East Coast guys you don't get to see too much.
That's
and
a good point.
So
it's kind of the center of the country in a way.
Yeah,
so
everyone kind of comes together. So my mate Keith Fields is here, and it was great to see, Pop Hayden and Nick Lewin. We were all hanging out yesterday, and Hobson was, the one day he's not working.
Right.
And so we were all, I was literally sitting there looking at these legends of comedy as they're just sitting there. I'm like, this is a great, just for that. We're sitting there telling stories. And Larry Wilson at one point is telling a story about, you should ask him about the Sam when he was opening for Sammy Davis Jr.
I will. I thought I had heard most of the stories, but maybe not that one.
I know. Okay. And it's a moment he'll start telling you about. It was when it was the night Cagney died.
Okay.
And Sammy started talking about Cagney. It's a great story. Really worthwhile.
I'm going to ask him about that one, because I had done a whole podcast with him one time out in Tahoe in Reno, and so we were, but he didn't tell me that one. I don't remember that story.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Extra material for you.
More stuff. So you're enjoying the convention, having a great time.
Yeah.
And I'm always having a great time. This is, I think, one of the better conventions as far as the IBM convention. They kind of, like with Magic Live or any convention you go to, that they're okay and some are better than others.
Yeah.
And I think that what makes it a lot of times are the people who are there, not only the attendees, but also the talent that's there. And I think that this year they have just an outstanding talent, you being one of them, because you're one of my favorite people.
Well, thank you.
You mentioned Jeff Hobson, Larry Wilson, and Nick Lewin, and Jeff McBride, and the Eugene Berger Legacy Lecture they had last night was really good. Were you there last night?
That was there last night. Yeah.
That was
very touching as well.
It was.
I remember Eugene.
Yes, well, as we all do, kind of miss him. Not kind of, we do definitely miss him. But Larry Haas really kind of channeled him. I think did a great job.
So, yeah. And McBride does a great vocal impersonation of Eugene as well.
Right. Yeah. Well, listen, thanks very much. I know
you
got the thing set up over here. We'll have a chance to chat later for a longer podcast, but thanks very much.
Always good about, we should talk about what I'm doing on Magic on the Go, what I'm trying to do with the online stuff. Are you aware of that?
I am not.
So a year ago, I started this Netflix for Magicians kind of thing,
okay,
where I'm putting up 10 to 20 videos a month on this one subscription site. But what I'm putting up is material that I've mined from, because I think we're losing the secrets of magic. I think we're losing it because the books are going away.
And it's all going to just YouTube videos.
YouTube videos and single trick DVDs, right?
That's true.
And so the stuff that the greats used to do that they learned from, like, doing 10 shows a day, like Leipzig and, you know, all those guys, we're losing that. So what I'm doing is I'm mining. Now we're able to PDF search some of the older pamphlets, you know,
right,
these guys like Library or Conjuring Arts who are doing this great job of digitizing the Magic Wand or Huguard's Magic Magazine or something like that. We can now go back and we can really search. Yeah, all the way back. And you can find these routines and then see what the pros did with it, add a little bit extra, and now pass that on to the new generation. So that's what I'm doing with Magic on the Go. So it's a very much kind of, you can look the stuff up on your phone and you can, wherever you are. You know.
I think it'd be interesting if someone were to take Tarbell and update that, you know, with things, because, you know, they still got a lot of old actors and everybody who were in there.
Who's
they
doing, someone is doing stuff from Tarbell.
Dan Harlan is.
Yes, and he's taking pieces from each chapter and you realize, you know, when you look at Tarbell, there's a lot of great stuff and there's a lot of not so great stuff that didn't put, but it's okay because look at the amount of material that there is in any
encyclopedia.
It's fantastic. That and Greater Magic alone should be
first thing that was on my shelf when I got
Greater
Magic.
Yeah,
you know, in fact, with Tarbell, briefly, I was when I first got started and I was doing some birthday parties. The first book I think was $10 or $12, so I charged $12, and then, you know, I said, okay, I'm going to buy that book, and then the next one's like $15. Okay, I'll learn some things. I think I'm worth more, so I could charge $15. And then when I got the seventh book, I think it was like $20, so I could charge $20.
That's great. That's a good way of looking at it. The more Tarbell you have,
that's right. And with each show, you know, that I would charge that amount. When I finally got, you know, past seven, then I would start charging, you know,
the
regular fees.
You were a top pro.
That's right.
Yeah, and eight was just cream on the.
That's right.
Eight doesn't really count.
That's right. Well, listen, yeah, we'll talk again later. Good luck.
Thanks
very much. Always good to see you, Steve.
I'm looking forward to having a longer conversation with you.
Indeed. So for the Magic Word Podcast, I'm Steve Valentine. This is Scotty out. Well, we just left the dealer's room over there and some other activities this afternoon. We had the stage contest. We've concluded the part two of the stage contest. We had some very good contestants, and as usual, a lot of Asians had scored very well, but there were a lot of other people who did very well, too. So we pretty much had the gamut of some really great shows. And so tomorrow night we'll have the final six that will be competing for a potential gold medal, and at least someone will be getting first prize, and also there'll be a People's Choice Award. But to follow up on the conversation we had with C. Valentine earlier here today, that he said, you need to ask Larry Wilson the story about Sammy Davis Jr. when you would open for him?
Yes.
Okay.
And which story?
You never told me this story, I think.
There's so many stories with Sammy. I mean, so many incredible, seriously incredible stories.
Okay.
So you have to give me a little bit more help. What is it referring to?
Was there somebody else who had come into the, that was on the show that night or something?
Oh, is he talking about when James Cagney passed away?
That was when James Cagney passed
away.
Oh,
my God. Oh, my God.
The story. There are so many more.
Oh, my God. There's so many stories. So many. I would hang out.
I love you, man.
Well, you have to. It's so hard to make younger people understand this now because it's an era that's passed.
Yes.
And I think it's passed with Sammy. Like, this guy could do everything.
I've seen Sammy Davis, actually, in Vegas performing.
So you know.
Yeah, I know. I've seen him live.
Nothing the guy can't do.
No. Yeah.
Right. In fact, before I tell you this story, I'll tell you another story.
Okay.
At Sammy's funeral.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I've suddenly forgotten the guy's name. Oh, God, so this makes me...
He'll come to you.
Well, it might not. But the place was packed at Forest Lawn. I mean, it was unbelievable.
Mm-hmm.
And the guy you know who's a big tap dancer, Gregory Hines.
Oh, sure.
Somehow his name did come back to me. You're right.
Yeah, still good.
Gregory Hines was one of the people giving a eulogy.
Okay.
And I mean, it was a warm day, and everyone was sweating, and the place was packed to overflowing. There were people outside, couldn't get in. And Gregor Hines got up, and he said, when I was growing up in Harlem, I'd hear these stories about Sammy Davis Jr. And Gregor Hines said, you know, I was known as, like, the best tapper in my neighborhood. I could do all this tap stuff that nobody else could do.
Yeah.
So I'd hear about the, oh, you got to see Sammy Davis Jr., you got to see. And he'd think, yeah, well, we'll see. You know, when this guy comes around, I want to see if he's got even in my
league.
Yeah, even in my league, you know. So he said he saved his money, and then he saw it was announced Sammy Davis was coming to the Apollo. So he got a ticket, sat in the front row. He said, I want to see for myself.
I'll be the judge of this.
Yeah. He said, this guy came out. And he started tapping, and he was good.
Yeah.
And Gregor Hines said, wow, he's really good. But then he started telling jokes.
Okay.
And he was as funny as any comedian. Then he started doing impressions of white people.
Yeah.
He said, we've never seen a person of color do an impression of a white person, and they were incredible. They were movie stars,
yeah.
And they were incredible. Then he played the trumpet. Then he played the drums.
Yeah.
Then he started singing, and he sounded incredible. And Gregor Hines said, I was sitting there watching him, and I thought, I can only tap.
That's all I can do.
Well, that really is the truth. Okay, so now I'll tell you. So I'm with Sammy at Harrah's in Reno, in a room that subsequently has been renamed as Sammy's Showroom. Gorgeous, beautiful room. It's a room you saw.
Yes.
Wonderland.
Okay. Yeah.
And we've been there about a week.
Okay.
So I sort of know what the set is. I know what, you know, songs he's singing, the order and stuff. And, you know, we've got like a 25-piece band, orchestra on stage with us, and his conductor, George Rhodes, and everything. Sounds great. It's going great. And that afternoon, Jimmy Cagney passes away.
Okay. And he's in L.A., I guess, living in Los Angeles.
Yeah, he's not there, but
he's not in Reno,
it's
right.
World news.
Yeah, of course
right?
It is.
And, of course, I'd forgotten, but Sammy is huge, huge film buff. I mean, knows every film.
I did not know that.
Oh, my God. He grew up in vaudeville when vaudeville still, there'd be a live act, a couple live acts, then they'd show a movie. They were trying to compete with this new thing of these motion pictures. So there'd be, for one ticket price, you'd see a motion picture, then you'd see three or four more live acts, then a second motion picture, three or four. You could stay there all day and night, you know. You could bring a lunch and, you know. So Sammy knows films backwards and forwards, and seriously knows. I remember one time in Lake Tahoe, he called me at my house there, and he was in town and said, oh, babe, you've got to come over here. You've got to see what's going on. And so I came
up,
and it was like midnight,
yeah.
And I said, what's going on? I said, we're going to the movies, man. I said, where? And he named the theater. I said, oh, Sammy, they close. It's a small town, Lake Tahoe. I said, they close at 10 o'clock. He goes, not for me, they don't, babe. And I thought, oh, my God.
I got to go.
Okay, here we go. So I get there. There's a limo. I get in the limo with Sammy and a few other people. We drive like all of 8 blocks or something. It's not far away, right? We get there. Sammy's bought out the theater. Mm-hmm. The theater is wide open, but it's just for Sammy and his friends. And his friends are always the gypsies, the dancers in all the shows,
oh, okay.
Because that's who he identifies with. And so all of them are there. And we come in, and he says, oh, you know, anything you want at the concession, babe, it's all free. Whatever you want to ask. He's paid for everything.
Wow.
Popcorn, candy, whatever you want.
Yeah.
And so all these, especially dancers who are athletes, who are like, you know, so they're all chowing down all this stuff. So I'll never forget this. The film was Beverly Hills Cop 3.
3, okay.
Okay? It was Beverly Hills Cop 3. So we come in, and as
was Eddie Murphy in 3?
Yeah,
okay.
Barely. So as we come in, and it's a small theater, it's a few hundred seats, as we come in, he points at me, goes, you know film, you're sitting next to me, man. And I said, okay. The credits come up, right?
Yeah.
And as the credits come up, at some point, the credits for edited by.
Okay.
And it's like eight names. Mm-hmm. And Samuel leans over to me and says, "That's a bad sign, babe."
It took eight people to edit it.
And I thought, that's very sophisticated.
Yeah.
Then I realized this film's a mess, and it was a mess.
Right? Yeah.
But anyway, so Sammy knows film backwards and forth. And he starts the show. And every night, I'm opening the show, and I'm doing like 25 minutes. And then at Harrah's, I mean, all these things, these details, I don't know if it matters to anyone, but it's in my head. Harrah's very serious about how things were run. Fantastic experience there. Very, like, the absolute pinnacle of professionalism. Set into the stage is a plexiglass window with a digital clock that counts down.
So the performer can actually look at it and see it. Okay.
So when they say you're doing 25 minutes, you come on stage at 25, now it's 24, 59. Mm-hmm. It's counting down.
Yeah.
When it gets to zero, you better be off stage.
Off the stage, yeah.
Right. No kidding around, man. No kidding.
Or you'll never come back.
Never. And you know, when I first came, I said, "Sammy, how much time do you want me to do?" He said, "Whatever you want, babe." I said, "Please don't do that." I said, "Please don't." I said, "You tell me exactly." He said, "Whatever you want." I said, "Please, Mr. D, you want me to do 20? You want to do 25? He goes, "Whatever you like." He says, "You want to do 25? I go, "Is that what you want?" He goes, "Yeah, that'll be fine." I would, you know, when I would finish, I would come off stage and I would watch the first 5-10 minutes of the show because it's always fantastic. There's always so much to learn.
Yeah.
So he's starting the show and he's sung a couple songs. And then he starts talking about something he hasn't talked about the whole time that we've been there. He says, I couldn't believe that Jimmy Cagney was gone. I couldn't believe that. And he starts to talk about being a kid and seeing all these films, White Heat and Public Enemy and Yankee Doodle Dandy incredible James Cagney films, spanning a tremendous, you know, mm-hmm. people who think of James Cagney as a tough guy,
as a gangster. Right.
But mm-hmm. see, I'm a Yankee Doodle Dandy. The guy can dance as well as Sammy. Incredible.
That's what he kind of studied, perhaps. Okay.
Old-time stars could do all this stuff.
Yeah, song and dance man.
Nowadays, you know, whoever it may be, Justin Bieber, he barely can do one thing. That's what he does, okay? So, but these, in those old days, without auto-tune and without Instagram and without YouTube and editing, they had to really be able to do this stuff, right?
Yeah.
And he's just talking. He starts talking about James Cagney. He starts talking about how, like, growing up, this was like an idol to
a
look up to.
Personal story, yeah.
And the audience is absolutely enraptured. Like, you can't hear anybody breathing. It's dead silent. And somehow, I wish I could tell you how, Scott. I don't know how. Like an unbelievable magic effect, he effortlessly, seamlessly transforms into Cagney. His physical body, as he's walking, suddenly looks like Cagney's swagger.
Yeah.
And he's got Cagney's funny head tilt, kind of quirky head tilt, and his hand positioning. And he starts talking like Cagney. And you'd swear, if your eyes were closed, it's James Cagney.
Yeah.
I've never heard an impressionist get anywhere this close. And the audience erupts. The audience goes crazy. And Sammy, very surprised, goes, "Oh, do you like that? I don't really do that, you know. I mean, it's just for fun. I'm not like those guys, like, you know, the guys who are
Rich Little,
or guys like that, you know.
Frank Gorshin.
Yeah, he said, those guys are good. I just do it for fun." And the audience goes, "Yeah." And he goes, "Oh, would you want me to do some more of that?" And they go, "Yeah." So now he does somebody else. And I can't remember, but all celebrities. Every single one of them is the most amazing impression.
He nailed them all.
Way beyond nailed. It's like a physical possession.
Wow.
Where the person comes alive. And he turns around to George Rhodes, his conductor. He goes, "George, do that thing, you know, bump, conk, conk, ka-chunk, conk." And George has this look on his face like, this isn't part of the show, and it isn't.
Yeah.
I've been with them a week. This is, and George starts making up something, sort of noodling on the piano, and Sammy's sort of scat singing,
yeah.
But he starts doing it as different people, and he's doing it. I can't remember who was president at the, but he's doing the president's voice, and he's doing famous BBC on television and old time stars and young stars. I mean, unbelievable. Like,
wow,
20 minutes, Scott.
Yeah, wow.
And then show. And then somehow, can't tell you how, seamlessly slides right back into the show.
And picks up where he left off.
Picks up where he left off, but somehow knows in his head he's got to eliminate certain songs because he's filled up that time.
Yeah.
Brings the show in right on time. And when he comes off, I'm still standing there in the wings, in costume, right?
Yeah.
And he says, oh, Mr. Wilson, what are you doing there? I said, I'm just sort of in graduate school, yeah. Mr. D. That's what I'm doing. He goes, oh, you like that? I said, yeah. I said, I have to ask you, why did you tell them you weren't very good? He said, I said, those are the best I've ever heard. He said, babe, when you tell them you aren't that good, they're more impressed when you are.
That's
and
good
I,
advice.
I said, oh, that's right. It's show business. Oh, right. I forgot it. It's show business. And he just saunters away. And I've never, ever forgotten it. I've never forgotten seeing it because I think you see stuff like this, it's never going to happen again.
No, that, yeah, it was one off, yeah.
That's done. That's done.
When I saw Sammy Davis Jr., there were people in the audience saying, do Mr. Bojangles. And he said, no, I really don't feel like doing that tonight, mm-hmm. you know. And they kept yelling it. And like the third time he said, listen, he said, I've got to be in the mood for doing certain songs. He said, it's, you know, the repertoire that I'm doing tonight is what I feel like doing, and I'm kind of bouncing around. The orchestra's, you know, keeping up with me. And he said, it's just not in me tonight. He said, please forgive me. You know, he was a bit nice about it, mm-hmm. you know. And I understand the next night that Shirley MacLaine was in the audience, and, you know, she was part of the Rat Pack. And so mm-hmm. he was saying, you know, for you, you know, I'm going to do this. And so he performs. Oh, I was only one night off.
Well, I'll tell you, it's interesting because, well, I'm sure I'm not saying anything out of school. On more than one occasion, not just to me, that Mr. Bojangles song, I think he had a weird love-hate relationship with. Mm-hmm. Because it's a fantastic song and became a signature for him.
It did, yeah. Oh, like Candyman, yeah.
Yeah, mm-hmm. But secretly, he had expressed to me that that sort of was a fear of his, that he was going to become Mr. Bojangles.
Oh, like Step and Fetch It.
That he was going to become the guy who used to have everything. Mm. I just remember that lyric, Mr. Bojangles, he spoke in tears how for 15 years his dog and he traveled around. Mm-hmm. The dog up and died. He just up and died. After 20 years, he still grieved. Mm-hmm. And I could just, I mean, this guy, of course, knew how to really sell a song with emotion.
Right.
But I think a lot of the emotion that came through is that he sometimes felt like, oh, my God, am I going to be this guy who's washed up and has nothing and just these memories? And, you know, it's funny because Sammy would tell you, I mean, he'd sometimes tell the audience, he would do songs that weren't necessarily in the repertoire. If someone said something or he got a feeling, and he said the difference in my show and, like, Wayne Newton's show, he said, watch the orchestra.
Really?
He said, when Wayne Newton goes, you know what? You people are beautiful.
Yeah.
I'm going to do something I don't ordinarily do. Mm-hmm. And then you watch the band, they just turn the page and
they're ready
music.
For the next thing that he does never do.
Because he always does this. And this is, he said,
show business.
He said, with Sammy, Sammy go, hey guys, do you remember that kooky thing that goes bonk, gong, gong, gong? And suddenly you see guys throwing sheet music in the air, digging frantically. They're under their chairs. It wasn't planned. They had no idea.
Yeah.
This is like completely off the cuff.
Yeah.
And some of them with maybe didn't have the music are going to try and fake their way through it because Sammy has just said long and tan and, you know, whatever crazy thing he might be doing. And you in the audience, you could feel this.
Right.
You could feel the spontaneity of it. You could feel the energy.
Intimacy of it also.
Oh my.
Even in a big stage, he broke that fourth wall better than anybody.
Oh my God, there was no fourth wall with him. Yeah. It was like, you felt like this guy was singing directly to you.
Yeah.
And if you made a joke or whatever it was, you felt like this is for us.
Yeah.
And of course, that's what we're all trying to do.
Right. There was, you remember Vic Kirk?
Sure.
When he used to work the Magic Island occasionally, that Mary, I believe, is his wife's name. Mm-hmm. And she would hand him a different prop, you know, from off stage, and he'd say, okay, we'll do this one then tonight, because a lot of times that it'll be a new trick that he hasn't done, you know, it's been in his repertoire for years, but it's not part of the regular show that
Absolutely.
They're doing tonight.
Absolutely.
It's like, and he's okay, and he does it flawlessly. You know, so it's like Sammy Davis Jr. You got to be able to do that, you know, in magic then, too.
Absolutely. You better have a huge repertoire.
Yeah.
And, you know.
And a lot of outs.
And you must have a ton of outs. You can't, you know, you can't ever. People who see me, one thing they comment on, of course, is that no matter what happens, I think you've seen this with me, Scott, mm-hmm. it doesn't matter what happens, I somehow am going to roll with it.
You know, I was just last night, because I posted the video for, rather the podcast from what we talked about yesterday, so that's in today's, and the video that you did with Ford. And I was thinking about the lady, what's her name, Miriam, or that was the actress?
Megan.
Megan, yes. Megan Ryan, or whatever her name is.
Can't
Megan
remember.
Somebody. Anyhow,
yeah.
That she had said something, and it seemed like that was not scripted quite right, but the way that you handle it, or something else, I think, that had to do with the
yes.
axe or something.
Yes,
and I
yes,
thought,
yes.
He is rolling with this, and it was funny, and you were talking to Guillermo, and he was talking to you, and
mm-hmm.
I mean, it sounded like it was perfectly scripted, and it was all funny. You know, but I could tell,
no,
knowing
you
that it's
you
like,
got it right
this
on
is
the
happening.
Nose. You got it right on the nose. Megan Rinks, she was so sweet. She was so nice.
Yeah.
I'd never heard of her before. Mm-hmm. She's a internet, what do they call them? There's a name, I'm going to say whatever
sensation.
Wrong. Well, they did call it internet sensation, but, you know, she's a trendsetter. She establishes what's hip and what's cool.
Okay.
They had her in that, I think, because she has like 3 million followers.
Okay.
Right? And so they know her followers are going to watch for this thing, right?
Yeah.
Well, that's 3 million more followers than I have. and actually, the people who are followers of mine, they won't necessarily do what I
yeah.
suggest.
Yeah.
Megan's will. Megan goes, oh, I just you got to see this. By God.
They'll go to the movie
Ford,
or whatever.
Ford yeah. is going to get 3 million people seeing this promo for
right.
Ford.
Right.
So. But she'd be the first one to tell you. She's very, very nice. But she's not an actress.
Mm.
And she doesn't have any experience.
She's like the Kardashians, just famous for being famous.
Right. Okay. I'm not exactly sure how she created this whole thing. But there's a quality about her that's vulnerable and that's appealing and that's compelling. And there's, in the same way that I've heard, there are these people who make these videos that are like an hour looking out the window of a train going through European countryside. And I guess that could be really relaxing if you're really struggling. You put that on the TV and you watch it. You go, hey man, I feel.
Or like watching a fireplace video or something.
Right,
maybe. Yeah.
Right, I feel much. Right.
Yeah.
So I saw some of Megan's videos and some of them were so. I was expecting something dramatic and they weren't. Like there was a thing of her making some soup, and
okay.
then she went and sat down and ate the soup. And she's talking to the camera.
Yeah.
But not about anything momentous. She's just talking about her day and stuff.
That's interesting.
And I thought, wow, this is a whole new way of looking at this stuff, right? So Megan was very out front. I had scripted the whole thing.
Yeah.
But I knew. And I said to her, I said, you do whatever you want to do, Megan. She goes, well, but what if I don't give you a cue line? I go, not to worry.
Mm-hmm.
Whatever you do, it'll be fine.
We'll roll with it.
And so you saw, Scott, exactly
yeah.
right. That a couple times she changed the line or she did the line earlier before.
Yeah.
Cue. And of course. And that whole idea of rolling with it,
mm-hmm.
that's about being in the moment.
Right.
And
not
I,
being frustrated by it.
Right.
Yeah.
I definitely learned that from Sammy, from being with him and seeing. I'd see crazy stuff. I saw one time some woman in the front row. Was kind of, he wasn't singing. He was between songs. But she said something. We couldn't hear it. And he said, what? He said, you want to see my rings? And, you know, he had all this jewelry.
Yeah, like Liberace.
And he said, sure. And he leaned down, and she was looking, and she was hysterically funny. This woman was just so excited, and she was, like, feeling all the rings. And he was kind of interacting with her, like, don't try to take that one off.
Yeah.
That's my Social Security. You know, and it was clearly not scripted. It was not part of the show. We in the audience, it's undeniable to us that it is absolutely spontaneous, happening in the moment.
Mm-hmm.
That's why we love live entertainment. That's why
good point.
Video, film can never take its place.
Right.
We can reach a much broader audience with video, mm-hmm. with movies, but it can never take the place of live. One, because of that like sense of this is happening just now and
right
will
now.
Never happen
again.
Again.
Right.
also because of the human energy we feel coming off the stage. And
feed on that, sure.
Oh, my God. Mm-hmm. You know, I was talking yesterday, when we were talking about my nonprofit and Spellbinders.
Right, right.
One of the first things when we did the big event in a 1,500-seat Performing Arts Center is that they said, well, shouldn't there be an age limit? I said, no, I want kids to be excited about live theater. Mm-hmm. I want them to be excited about the library. I want them to be excited about the arts. I don't need to help them get excited about computers and the Internet. That's going to happen automatically.
Right.
But people said, well, but you know, if you have kids under 5 or 6, they aren't going to be able to sit still. I said, well, let's see. Little tiny kids, 2 years old, 3 years old, 4 years old, sitting mesmerized for 2 hours. And at one point, I remember in the first year, I said something about, you know, maybe we should take a bathroom break because I hadn't scheduled intermission.
Yeah.
And like no one wanted to leave their seat. I said,
yeah,
you know, you're going to be able to come back and take the same seats. And, nope, no. Little tiny kids. And afterwards, all these adults mobbing me going, I've never seen my kid look up from his Game Boy. I've never seen my kid put the phone down. I've never seen my kid look away from the tablet.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking, well, yeah. I said, because they've never seen. They said, well, they've seen stuff on TV. I go, yeah, on TV, never live. Mm-hmm. I said, what your kids see that you may be missing, they feel something coming off the stage. Doesn't come out of that computer monitor.
Right.
Doesn't matter who it is. Nothing comes out of that monitor. But live, they see Rocco Solano. Mm-hmm. And the first year Rocco is in the show, and the first year I was nervous, and so I kind of over-delivered, and I kind of front-loaded the show. I had too many people on it.
Too many performers.
I wanted the show to run 90 minutes, and it ran just a little over 2 hours. But I wanted to make sure, even though it was free, mm-hmm. I wanted to make sure that it overwhelmed everyone. Well, it would have been an hour. But anyway, about 45 minutes in, backstage, Rocco comes to me. He says, you're playing an applause track in the house, right? And I said, what? He said, you're playing a music track that has applause on. I go, no. He goes, oh, but you have the audience mic'd. I said, no, we don't have the audience mic'd. He said, we're hearing what's really going on. I said, that applause is because this audience appreciates. This is not Los Angeles or mm-hmm. New York mm-hmm. or someplace that
they don't see this kind of thing.
Yeah, they've never seen this. They know that you people came here because you believe mm-hmm. in literacy, education, in the libraries. You want something good to happen here, mm-hmm. right? These people are losing their minds. And he said, well, I'm just wondering, you know, can you get me on sooner? Because these people, they're going to get exhausted. I said, Rocco, these people could stay like this level of energy all night. He goes, really? I go, you went. So Rocco goes on about an hour into the show. Mm-hmm. And he destroyed that room, 1,500 seats. He hurt them so badly.
I can imagine.
People screaming, cheering. And you know Rocco, he'll do like maybe 10 minutes on, and then he goes up to the microphone, he pulls out a piece of paper, and he puts on glasses, and he's studying it. And then he reads, hello, I'm Rocco. Like, oh my, he brought the house down with this.
Yeah.
And when he came off stage, he said, I've never, ever had this experience of feeling this kind of reaction from Rocco. I said, well,
these people never see live entertainment. They can't afford it. They're kind of on a lower end of the income spectrum, I think. And so when they're coming to a free show or a library show, this is more than they're expecting. When they're seeing a professional show like this.
Oh, my God. Well, I mean, you know, there was a fantastic thing with an older woman at one of the libraries who came up to Leonard Green mm-hmm. and said to him, you are so good. And he, you know, he's so gracious. He said, oh, thank you. And she said, you should think about doing this professionally. She said, I think you could really do well. And he was like, oh, thank you. That's very nice of you to say.
Consider that.
And right. They don't know the caliber. Yeah. All they know is, boy, these people are good.
Yeah.
But, and we tell them. I mean, we list their credits and we say all the awards they've won, but they don't really understand what
they
that means.
Together.
I
right.
tell them about what FISM is and I explain what that, but they don't really
right.
understand that. But in the live show at the Performing Arts Center, here's another thing, Scott. people would come up to me and they'd say, we've lived here 28 years and we've never been inside this theater. Hmm. And they said, we always wondered what goes on here. I said, well, what do you think? Yeah. And they said, well, it's like a theater. I said, that's exactly right. That's what
yeah.
it is.
Yeah.
You could do a dance recital. You could do a chamber music. You could do a lecture. You could do a play. You yeah. could do what we're, you could do anything. And I just thought, just to make people feel like they're part of this community. And we're not, no one, I mean, you know, live theater can be expensive. So
right.
tickets for regular stuff there could be $65 a piece up to maybe $150.
Yeah.
And family of four may just be out of their reach. So, and people were saying to me after the first, they said, oh my God, this show. They said, you know, you could charge $5 a person. I go, yeah, of course we could. But then if you have four kids and your husband and wife, now suddenly that's $30.
It's expensive, yeah, for some people. Yeah.
Maybe, you know mm-hmm. what? Maybe that's, if that's the dividing line, mm-hmm. I want to erase it.
Yeah.
If that's the difference, I don't want anyone to feel like, God, I wonder what's in there. Well, we're going to show you what's in yeah. here. And if it makes some kid so excited that they go home and they get excited about live theater and they want to learn to play piano
yeah.
or they want to learn to dance or they want to learn to sing or mm-hmm. act or do gymnastics, if they want to learn to do something like you see in Cirque du Soleil, the sort of gymnastic, mm-hmm. whatever it is, like, how could that be a bad thing? Right,
right. Right.
I mean, I can't. And so, you know, that feeling of being there in the moment and being right on top of that live,
yeah,
nothing will yeah. ever take that place.
Well, thank you. I started kind of going down a rabbit hole of different ways.
Oh, yeah?
There was always good. Because I was going to, if we had time, I was going to ask you about some Frank Sinatra stories also, which I'm sure which you got some things also.
Well, there's stories aplenty, Scott. We'll save them for another,
but, another time.
You know, it's crazy, Scott. I forget
yeah.
till I talk to someone like you.
Yeah.
I forget. It's not that I take these people for granted, but I sort of got to be friends with a lot of them.
Yeah.
And it's not like I was at their house hanging out all the time. Mm-hmm. But when I would see them, they were so casual and friendly with me that I just sort of think of them like I think of you.
Yeah.
Right? Mm-hmm. And so until someone like you reminds me, goes, oh, tell me that story, I think.
Because I was a celebrity. Oh, yeah, I guess he was. And so, yeah, just another guy.
Right.
Yeah.
And I also think, well, who would care about this story? And then when you say, oh, Steve Valentine was telling you, I think, oh, and I guess it is sort of a funny story.
Yeah.
The crazy stuff yeah. that I've seen.
I would imagine so. People have asked me, too, about some people that, like with you and others that I hang around with. It's like, well, did you get his autograph or get a picture? It's like, no, we just don't sit around and take pictures of each other, you know. We're hanging out, you know.
Scott, this is something I sorely regret because I'm exactly like you. Mm-hmm. People say, do you have pictures of Sammy?
Yeah.
I know that somewhere I must have, like, a snapshot. Like some goofy, maybe semi out of focus thing that someone yeah. took at some, but all these people I work with,
yeah.
if I have a photo of me with them, it's because somebody else thought to take it, and later
not
on
you. Yeah.
said, and I could kill myself now
yeah.
thinking, because I thought exactly what you. I thought, I'm not going to embarrass my friend by saying, will you pose for a photograph with me? I mean, yeah. I feel ridiculous doing that. I don't want to make them feel uncomfortable. I don't want to make them feel like I want to exploit them.
Right.
They're just friends of mine. I want to have a burger or whatever right. and hang out.
Yeah, right? You don't think about that. Yeah, there was an article, it was a cover article, I think it was on Genie with Banachek or Magic Magazine. Anyhow, the point was they contacted me, saying, hey, you're his best friend. So, you know, would you write an article or, you know, have you got some photos at least to send us? I thought, we just don't sit around and take pictures of each other, you know? So, no, I really don't know if I've got any. I said, I should have, you know?
No,
I mean, over the 30 years we've been partners, you know?
Right.
Yeah, a lot of people that you hang out with, you just don't think about it, you know?
Well, so. The other day, somebody sent me a roll of, wasn't a roll, it was in strips, 35 millimeter black and white pictures mm-hmm. of me and Brooke Shields mm-hmm. and Linda Evans
okay.
from when we worked on a television show. I have no memory. I remember doing that with them, but I have no memory of these pictures being taken.
Yeah.
Someone was obviously shooting them, and how they found me or thought to send them to me, And I thought, my first thought was, nowadays, how do you make these into pictures? So I found a lab. They said, oh, we'll digitize them. Okay, we'll take them and digitize them. But I thought, this is so weird. I wonder what else may be out there.
Yeah, good point.
You know, I found a photo of me and Anne Margaret, and I don't remember what it's from, and I have never seen it before, but I was grateful that someone...
somebody had captured it.
Yeah.
Well, listen, thanks again, Larry.
Of course.
It's always a pleasure talking with you. So who knows? You know, so we had 2 days with Larry. We might get some more tomorrow. Who knows? A man of unending stories. Thanks
very
again.
Very hard to shut him up, is what
the man and the stories. So from the Magic Word Podcast, that was Larry Wilson. This is Scotty Howe. All right, well, we just finished a lecture by David Malik, who had some really great card moves, and it was well attended. And later on, we're going to be having an evening show at 8 o'clock. But beforehand, of course, it's Thursday, which means it's Magic and Martini night, and there are several of us joining us. Over there is Jim Cox, Ali Shelley. We've got a friend of the Magic Word, Mr. John Graybeal, and over here is Jarvis, amen, and then Gay Blackstone. And so, but Gay, the reason I wanted to turn this back on is because we were just talking with Larry Wilson, and we're talking about Sammy Davis Jr., and I asked, hey, have you worked with him? She said, well, yes, of course, and the story is...
Well, I worked with Sammy many, many times, and the two most memorable things is the fact that, you know, Sammy, for all of his many times working, Sammy only had one hit record, and Mike Curb was the producer of his one hit record, and on that particular record... I was one of the singers on it, as well as Harry Blackstone III, HB as we called him, HB3. And it was so funny because Sammy, we recorded it in the middle of the afternoon, and Sammy came in, did the first take, and Sammy said, that's good.
Wow.
And and Mike said, I don't think so. It needs a little energy. And Sammy said, it needs some energy.
You're telling me, Sammy Davis Jr.?
And so, and Mike Curb said, let's put some snaps into it, finger snaps.
Yeah.
And so we did it the next time with finger snaps. And Sammy said, did you like that one? And Mike said, no, too many snaps. He said, let's do snaps here and here. So we did snaps there and there. And Mike said, well, that was pretty good. Well, let's try it one more time. And by this point, Sammy was starting to get just a little perturbed because he was Sammy Davis. Anyway, so third take. Did it, and at that point, Mike said, yeah, that sounds good. Let's do it one more time, and I will direct you. And Sammy looked at him and said, okay, you direct. Fourth take, Mike was directing. And then Mike said, yeah, that's good.
That's what he
so
wanted.
The fourth take was the one that went out, and that was the hit, and that was Sammy's only hit song.
What was the song?
Ever. Candyman.
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 Yeah, sure, okay.
And that was
And you were in the background of Candyman.
I was in the background of that, as was HB3, and that was his hit record. But then much of the time, I would be...
Love that sound of shaking.
Oh, yes. I know that sound so well, yes. Oh, yes, I'm sorry. I produce,
back to the story.
I'm sorry. I'm sorry. I produce G-rated shows. Of course I do. Yes, yes. But no, I was Sammy's dance double. There was a for Scrim when he did Bojangles. So I did Bojangles.
Silhouette and you were back there.
Silhouette, yes. At that point, I was a great match for Sammy. Uh-huh. And so I would do Mr. Bojangles behind the Scrim. And so I was his dance double for Bojangles for years.
In Vegas? Or did you travel with him? Or?
In Vegas, in Lake Tahoe. Mm-hmm. Even at times when I wasn't really traveling with him, but I would be there like with the Mike Curb congregation or somewhere else, and Sammy would say, okay, you're here. Okay, I can do Bojangles tonight. So it got to be really funny to be like, he'd see me and go, okay, you're here tonight?
Yeah.
Yes. I mean, okay, guys, because George Rhodes was his musical director, and his wife Shirley, who was delightful, and it would be like so. Even whether he wasn't scheduled to do it, if they saw that I was in the building, suddenly, Bojangles was back in the show.
Wow. That's great. Because I was just telling Larry whenever I saw Sammy Davis Jr. perform that there were people from the audience saying, do Bojangles. He said, oh, I don't feel like it tonight. And they two or three times said, I told you, I don't. And apparently the next night, I guess Shirley MacLaine was in the audience. And it's like, you know, they're friends. He said, I'll do it tonight.
Yeah. And it all depended, though,
who was also there that would be his dance double.
Oh,
because
okay.
he would only do it if he had someone that he trusted to be the shadow. Because being the shadow for Bojangles was so important to him, because he would also, he had the set routine for Bojangles. But if he was feeling really feisty, he would sometimes change the routine slightly. And so you really had to pay attention, because there was a set routine. But if he was feeling a little feisty, he would then decide to do a little extra tap dance that wasn't part of the regular routine.
Okay, right.
And the shadow had to really be watching, because otherwise the shadow might not be planning on tap dancing.
Exactly.
And
right.
so so you really did have to pay attention, because Sammy loved to be a trickster. And he was a great trickster, but great fun. And
that was what Larry was saying also, that he did different things, apparently, you know, that his orchestra had to keep up with him. I mean, that, it's like, where are we going to go? And they're throwing up the sheet music, you know.
That was Sammy.
Unlike, he said, like Wayne Newton would say, well, I'm going to do something very special for you guys, and they just turned the page. It's like, okay.
Yes.
Oh. Yeah, but he really was
Sammy
more.
Sammy really was like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And, you know, there were, you know, just, it was like Harry. You know, Harry would sometimes see something, or he'd feel the audience wasn't with him, so he would go off on a tangent. And unless you were listening, you would be in the wrong costume, and because Harry would have gone to a different illusion, and it'd be like, I don't think that's what we're doing right now, is it? So, you know, and Sammy was the same way. You know, they pay attention to their audience, and that's what Sammy would do. Or there were people in the audience that he knew, as you said, like Shirley MacLaine, and their favorites.
Right.
And he would sing something just for them.
Your friends, yeah. Mm-hmm. So you feel special.
Yes.
Yeah. That's cool. Well, listen, the martinis are here. It's time to make a toast. There we go. There we go. Happy Thursday.
Absolutely.
Happy Magic and Martini Thursday. Right? That's right. Man, that is really the tippy top over there. I think you did a great job, Allie.
Okay, we can do it.
A little bit over there. Hey, Jim. Okay. Clink, mate. Oh, you can reach all the way. There, you got it. Okay,
oops.
Perfect. Okay, yeah.
I can do it now. I break some.
The bottom. There we go. I'll have some of that.
Yes.
Cheers. Oh, yeah. That's good. That's good. All right. Well, listen, thank you very much. Good story. Gay Blackstone. There you go. The Magic Word Podcast. Have a martini. Enjoy. This is Scotty out. All right, well, we are getting ready soon for the evening show, and we've already had the David Malik lecture, which was really great, having to do with I already told you about that. We've had our Magic and Martinis, and so now I'm here with Christian Malikson?
Rasmussen,
sorry. And he is the first recipient of the Bill Cook Award for the Lance Burton Teen Seminar. So tell me, how was the teen seminar?
Oh, it was amazing. We learned so much great stuff. We had Lance Burton there, Larry Haas, Jeff McBride, Bill Cook, and Michael Tetrow. It was great. They all put a lot of work into it. They donated their time, their money, and it was such a great experience.
So it was a couple of days before the convention, or a day before the convention or something?
Yeah, I think 2 days before the convention. And then
you were here for both days?
Yeah, and then it ended Wednesday morning when the convention started.
And now, where are you from?
Greenville, about 45 miles northeast of here.
Okay, so it was kind of easy for you to kind of get down here and do this.
Kind of, yeah. The hard part is staying late and then getting up early in the morning, because we don't get home for 45 minutes. Yeah.
So you're driving back and forth?
Yeah. Yeah.
And now, why did you win the award? What did you do that qualified you for this?
Well, so they thought I had a personality just like Bill Cook's, and they thought I had a good sense of humor
that.
And stuff. Well, thank you. Yeah. So I take it you know Bill Cook.
Very well.
Good.
Yes. Yeah, we've been friends for a long time, and since he was much younger, and I'm glad to see how successful he's been, and so it looks like that you're going to be the next Bill Cook, I guess, kind of a guy.
Well, I hope so.
So what is your favorite kind of magic? What do you do?
My father and I perform stage magic. We perform all over the state.
Mm-hmm. Now, when you say stage magic, you mean do you have illusion like a zigzag or sub-trunk or what?
I have done the zigzag before, but it's not that big of a production usually. It's more of the stage stuff that everybody can see without like a camera or whatever, yet it's not as big as illusions or whatever. We don't have any assistants.
It's just you and your dad.
Yeah.
And so when you're working like in the shopping malls or libraries? Or?
We do various libraries. One of our good gigs is Crystal Mountain Ski Area up by Traverse City.
I've skied there. I know exactly what you're talking about.
Okay.
I mean, I'm from Houston. I've been up here.
Okay, cool. Yeah, we do various stuff. We do a bunch of assisted living care homes, too, just to give the older folks, yeah, the experience and to lighten their day.
Right, right. So what is your favorite kind of magic? What do you like to do?
Well, when you mean favorite kind?
Well, I mean, like, you doing close-up? Do you like stage, or do you card tricks? Or
I like to stick with stage. We don't do many cards. We mainly like the bigger props or whatever.
Okay. Do you build anything, or do you buy things, or what?
We have built various stuff, but we start with the tricks, and we add on our big props and make cool stuff out of that.
Mm-hmm. And so what has been your best experience?
My best experience here, you mean?
Yeah. This convention.
I love the Lance Burton Teen Seminar and the last lecture that you mentioned. I don't know his name, the King.
David Malik.
Oh, yeah, the King. Yeah. He was great. It's one of the funniest experiences I've ever witnessed.
Have you attended some of these other IBM conventions, or is your first?
This is my first one.
Really?
Yeah, we don't want to travel halfway across the country.
That's true. It just so happens it's kind of in your neighborhood kind of thing.
Yeah, pretty much.
So after this, now that you have won, are you going to be going to other conventions in the future?
I would like to. I don't think my dad and I are. We spend enough money on the magic itself instead of going to the conventions, too.
So as you get older, you probably will kind of come back and we'll hear your name again.
Oh, yeah. I'd love to come to the conventions, but it's a stretch. It's travel, all the expenses of that. And even coming to the convention is expensive, too.
Sure.
Yeah. It's been a great time, though. I wish I could come again.
Who have been some of your heroes in magic?
Lance Burton was one. A lot of the older guys. I like the...
So you really get into the history of magic and you like these older guys?
Yeah, I haven't seen much of the new Las Vegas shows or whatever, but all the older guys who have developed their acts for years, they can really put stuff together and perform.
I'm assuming you've never been to Las Vegas to see, like, Chris Angel or anybody like that?
No, I'm not really into that stuff.
You're how old?
12.
12. It's amazing. Now, what did you do that had impressed them to make you, you know, to have you win the contest?
Well, I know this might sound weird, but I think I was just kind of myself, and I tried to be very polite. I don't know. I think I was very good at participating in everything, and I think everybody there deserved an award like that, too, because everybody there was really paying attention and participating, and it was a great class, best class I've ever been in.
That's really great to think that Jeff McBride is doing this for, you know, out of the goodness of his heart, basically. You know, he and Larry Haas and others who are coming in and teaching you guys, you know, this kind of stuff. What was the one thing that you learned this weekend?
Oh, well, there was definitely a lot more than one thing. Well,
several. But what'd you learn?
I'll say two main things. First of all, make sure that your effects are magic, not just tricks.
Yep.
And the second one is that make sure to involve acting in your programs. Like, make sure you have great scripts, good words, and your movement is great, too.
So do you work a lot with your scripts?
Yeah, the scripts are the main part. We don't have as much sleight of hand. We have more scripts. And I love to speak in front of an audience.
Right, right. Well, that's great. Well, congratulations.
Thank you.
So you won the Bill Cook Award, and so where do you plan to, are you going to compete in the future, you think, like in contests?
If I can get that good, I will, but I don't know. We'll see.
Because Bill did, you know, Bill was involved with the contest and everything, too.
Well, Bill's a lot better than I am.
Well, but you're going to be the next Bill Cook, you said, so.
Hey, you never know.
You don't know. Well, thank you very much, Christian. It's very good meeting you, and thanks very much for sharing.
Yeah, thank you. It was very nice to meet you, too.
And so that was Christian, I'm sorry, Robus, say your name again?
Rasmussen.
Christian Rasmussen. I got it. And for the Magic Word Podcast, this is Scotty Yacht.
IBM badge about 20 years ago and snuck into an IBM thing in L.A.
Yeah.
Me and Brian Gillis, and that was my first one. But this is the first one I performed at. But I like going to the dealer's room. I always love it. I'm a good guy to have at the dealer's room, so I spend a lot of money, and my wife spends even more.
What kind of stuff does she buy?
I don't know, but I had six $100 bills in my wallet about an hour ago, and now I just looked at my last $100 bill.
Yeah.
So she's buying about $400 worth of magic without me even knowing about it until I go to buy something. Hi. Is there another shuttle coming? Are they...
No.
All right.
So, yeah, we're waiting for a shuttle for the evening show over here. It's going to be the Comedy Legends of Magic. You're not in tonight's show.
I'm not. I'm at the other theater. They separate me from them.
But wait a minute. You're a comedy legend.
I am. I'm the comedy legend.
In my mind, you are.
Which is why I'm not with those guys. Because I know if I was there in that room with those guys, Matt King would plant a bomb there, and it'd go off, and he'd be the only one left. So I'm not giving Mac that satisfaction.
Okay. Well, Amazing Jonathan is amazing, I tell you. You are... So how did you get your name Amazing?
I don't know, but it was a...
It
was pretty bad. It was pretty lazy, wasn't it? I must have wanted
to
go
home. You couldn't think of anything
else. I must have wanted to go somewhere really bad or go
home.
You
were in a hurry.
Yeah. I was just like, Amazing Jonathan.
Sounds good.
Little did I realize if I were to make movies, you would never see Robert De Niro and the Amazing Jonathan. You know, I don't think that would... Nah, it wouldn't fly. It's better than the Adequate Jonathan, though. Nobody buys tickets for that.
The Adequate. Well, I know a guy named goes by Peter the Adequate.
Peter the Adequate?
In Austin, yeah.
Is he, and he's a magician or
he's
a porno star?
I saw
somebody in a porno wearing my T-shirt. That's so funny, I did.
No kidding.
Yeah, I watched a porno, and the guy was wearing my shirt, and I'm like... No kidding, there might be. That's pretty good. Pretty good endorsement.
It had your picture on it, that kind of. I've got one of your shirts, actually. Your T-shirt.
What are you saying? It might have been you?
No. No. I'm saying that I got one of your T-shirts. I don't think that was me in that movie.
I used to give out my T-shirts to the homeless when I played at the Sahara in Vegas. Every time I'd go by the homeless person, I'd give them throw out shirts out the window for them, you know. And pretty soon, every bum and every homeless guy in Vegas had my shirt on. Great ad.
That's funny.
Great advertising.
Well, of course. Better than putting those cards in the taxis, you know.
Yeah, it's like that. It's kind of like that.
You know, I years ago used to go by Great Scott. And
Great Scott?
Yeah. And
who used to go by Great Scott? I know Great Scott.
Well,
you used to go by Great
Scott? I used to go by Great Scott.
Oh, there's another Great Scott out there, too.
Yeah.
Did you know that?
Okay. Yes, apparently so. Because Bill Larson told me years ago that some guy named Great Scott was working cruise ships and he was abusing doves.
He killed a dove, a ceiling fan.
Yes. So they said, is that you? And I said, no. And I sent him a picture and he said, okay, we'll book you. And
yeah.
So that was
yeah,
my
he
first
killed,
time at the castle.
The bird flew up into a ceiling fan and hit the fan and the feathers went everywhere. You can't plan that kind of humor. That's kind of humor I dream of doing, but you just can't stage that.
No, so you'll enjoy this story. A buddy of mine, Charlie McFarlane, one time was working with a church basement, and he was using a dove pan. And whenever he produced the doves, apparently they had caught fire and they fell on the stage. And he was trying to stamp out the fire, these little baby chicks. And because it was
Wouldn't he stamp the bird out?
Yes. Stamping the birds out, and because it was some sort of a nylon carpeting or something, that caught fire. So he went in the kitchen of the church, and he picked up this pan. Apparently it was grease, and when he poured it on that, he didn't think that was water. And so that just made a bigger fire, and he's like, he just went
from
bad to
worse. This is great. I always wanted to come out with a tuxedo on, real fancy music, have a table with a nice candelabra, and light the candle. And have it run down the can and ignite the whole table, and that was the end of the show. Somebody
done.
Would run
Thank
out with a
much.
Fire extinguisher and hit us both with a fire extinguisher. That would be the beginning and the end of it.
Yeah, yeah, very short show.
Gary, you remember Gary Ouellette?
I do, from Canada. Yep.
He's killed more birds than I've ever heard.
What?
Of.
I did not know that. Gary, I didn't know he did doves.
Well, we were talking about the Great Scott incident,
and
he was telling me all the times he accidentally killed birds, and there was about maybe 15 or 16 different incidents where he. Not purposely, but accidentally killed a lot of birds. Dove pans are not good. They heat up very quickly.
They do.
Yeah.
Yeah, you shouldn't really use livestock.
I stepped on one once. Mine ran away from me on stage, and I was chasing it, and it stopped very quickly, quicker than I could stop, and I ran over it. And it was my bird I'd had for maybe 10 years. And the guts came out of its mouth when I stepped on it, and the kids all were crying. It was chaos.
Yeah. Not a good birthday party.
Nah, it was not fun.
You didn't get paid, I guess, for that show.
No, I did get paid. Oh. I got $4 a show. I got receipts for $4 from some of the first shows I did.
No, you must have been working like back when Noah, you're like working cruise ships.
No, this is only a few years ago.
just a few years ago. Man. Yeah, who would want to book you for a birthday party? I wouldn't think of Amazing Jonathan and booking a birthday party.
People call me, though. They call me and say, you know, my kid's having a bar mitzvah or whatever, and they love your act, and they saw you on TV. We want you for the bar mitzvah. How much do you cost? And I'm like, well, that'd be about $35,000, $40,000.
Yeah.
And then there's this, well, maybe next year. Maybe we'll say, yeah, right. They don't realize how much a guy who does drugs needs the money.
Well, you know, I'm the entertainment director for the Magic Island. I might be able to use you sometime.
Is that open again now?
It's going to be open in November.
And you're going to be in it?
I'm the guy who's booking the shows.
Great.
That's
good. I don't remember.
It closed
the original
in 2008.
Magic. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I probably would do it. I probably would do it now.
That'd be fun.
Yeah.
Be good to have you. You'd be somebody different. I mean, a lot different.
How many seats does it have?
163.
I can do that standing on my head.
I know. It's like a comedy club.
No. No, comedy clubs are 500 seats now.
What? Are you still working comedy clubs? I didn't know they were
still
around.
Well, I did. Last year I came out of retirement and I did about maybe 6 months worth of improvs, just improvs. And they were all 500 seats, very hard to fill. You know, after Vegas, I figured, well, this will be easy to fill 500 seats.
Yeah.
Not so much, you know. People forget real quick. The whole generation of comedy fans, my comedy fans, are now, you know, they're in their 40s and 50s. All these new kids, they don't know who the hell I am. Only because of Chris Angel do they know who I am, you know. Because I was on his show a bunch of times.
Yeah, exactly.
So I've had to start from square one again, you know. I've had to go out and start doing all the promo, social media, and all that crap. So
people can try to figure out who you are now.
They kind of know now.
I think it's kind of funny when Lance Burton says, I used to be Lance Burton, because he is not performing anymore. So, you know.
He'll soon find out how fast they forget, you know.
Yeah.
They do.
Well, I remember, Murray Sawchuk had told me one time about how that you can be a big person in Las Vegas because of all the advertising and everything. You go outside the city limits and you are absolutely
That's
nobody.
Right. Murray wouldn't know that. He's got neither of those, but but I know his point. Danny Gans was like that.
Okay. Danny's another
And
one.
Matt King, I mean, as much as people know who Matt King is, he didn't have a lot of international exposure. You go outside the world of magic, Matt King. You know, they don't know who Matt King is. They don't know who any magician is.
Outside of Las Vegas, that's true.
No, outside of the magic community.
Well, no, I understand what you're saying, but
they know who Matt King is outside of Vegas. All the magic community knows who he is.
Sure.
Yeah.
But I'm saying when you're in Vegas, that you would see Matt King show.
Yeah.
But it's not because of all the signage and advertising. I mean, he doesn't do a lot of advertising, I don't think.
No, he doesn't need to. His word of mouth is
right.
Got the tightest.
Is this our ride? Or is that an Uber also?
That's an Uber also.
Okay, well, we still got to wait for the next shuttle.
Are they putting people in shuttle, or are they putting people in these Escalades?
These are
Ubers over here, I think. I think our shuttle is coming back around here.
Yeah, it should be here shortly. It's a white 10
passenger. Who are we seeing tonight? Who's that? Mike Finney and who else?
Jeff Hobson and Larry Wilson and Pop Hayden and Michael Finney.
Okay.
And I thought you would have gone on the show, too, but obviously
I am
not.
Going
I guess
to, I'm going to the show, yeah.
You're
going
to be attending the show, but not
performing.
Yeah, no,
they got me doing my own show, and they're charging money for my show.
I paid for it, actually.
$5.
I've got a ticket in my wallet right now.
And if you do the math on that, you may say 100 people show up.
You could get $500.
$5 times, that's $50,000.
Yeah.
If I'm doing my math right.
We're about 150, 100.
You're not
far.
A financial advisor, are you?
No, I'm really bad with math. However, I figure it's got to be at least
a lot of money.
Yeah, 50,000 or whatever. I don't know. I'm not doing it for the money. We're giving it all to charity. They've worked it out so I don't have to deal with a tax man. It all goes to charity. I don't have to go to the bank to deposit anything. It's really nice that they worked this all out.
Yeah, you have your hands off. Nothing to do with it.
No, that's
great. So you don't attend a lot of conventions or anything. So
the first one.
This is as far as the IBM. What do you think of this? I mean, I think it's kind of great. There's a lot of great people here.
Yeah, there's a lot of great people here. Yeah,
Steve Ballantyne, Mike Finney, Jeff Hobson, and everybody.
Yeah.
Great.
Yeah. How do they do that? Oh, I gotta go.
Oh, okay. There you go. All right. So that was Amazing Jonathan. This is Scotty out.